Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Brittany Meyer.
Hey, good to be here.
How you doing?
I am doing so good. Just had a Diet Coke. I am ready for this.
Yeah. Well, and Moody is living her best damn life.
We both are. We're having a great time here. Glad to be here.
There are a lot of different kinds of Diet Coke.
I go with regular.
Regular Diet Coke.
Regular Diet Coke. Yes. The only the diet, the nice little silver label. I grew up on it. So, cool. This is...
I also grew up on it. My dad was a big Diet Coke guy, and so it was always in our fridge.
Yeah, my mom. I don't think I've ever seen her drink water. I have only seen her drink Diet Coke.
My dad had a specific Diet Coke mug.
Yep, my mom had one of them.
What is Coke Zero?
That's no caffeine. Or sugar.
Well, because is there also caffeine free?
Yes.
So there's caffeine free Diet Coke. Wait, isn't Coke Zero? Wait a minute.
I'm pretty sure Coke Zero is zero caffeine, zero sugar.
Yeah.
Then there's Coke Free, which is, I think, not aspartame. There's so many.
Well, and then stevia. There's all these flavors.
Yeah, it's just syrup. Yeah. Well, now Diet Coke specifically is like grape and lime and all terrible flavors, if I'll be honest.
Grape Diet Coke sounds like a nightmare.
So yeah. The piece of this is this week I've been spending more time with a Coke freestyle machine.
Oh, we have one of those in my office. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like it's this when you see the syrups, because that's the thing I'm confused by, because there's the Diet Coke.
Well, your relationship with the Coke freestyle machine is that you restock it.
Yeah, there's the Diet Coke, there's the no caffeine Diet Coke, and then there's Coke Zero.
Yeah, and I will also, I want to vouch at this point, because we're making it sound like it's ridiculous that there's so many different types of Coke, but this is actually very necessary.
As a person, I'm really glad we got to here, because this is what I how do you feel about the, bevy of Diet Coke options?
The bevy of bevies
is very important, but belligerent. I was trying to go for another B. It just couldn't come. Couldn't get there. No, I think it's important. I mean, honestly, I only ever go with a silver Diet Coke, but damn it, sometimes when I'm in the office, got that freestyle, I'll put a little splash of the vanilla cherry Diet Coke. Ooh. Just a little something to top it off at the top. Otherwise, it's too much if you have the whole thing.
That's super fair. Mm-hmm. That is super fair. Yep. No, I have never been a soda drinker. So it's hard for me to just, I don't have that, that personal experience.
I used to be a soda drinker, and I don't, for some reason, I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
But, occasionally, I'll, treat myself to it, and oh my God.
I'm just trying to think of,
Wait, what soda you treat yourself to?
There are three. No, there are four.
Okay.
So, when I panic drive through McDonald's because I need calories, I'll get Sprite, because McDonald's Sprite, they do something to it. It's ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. And then my go-to kind of interchangeable ones are Dr. Pepper and root beer.
Mm. Which root beer, though? There's a right answer.
Oh, my God. Sprecher.
Okay, they're very good. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from Milwaukee. And that's the hometown root beer.
Okay.
Wait, what's the right answer?
Well, Sprecher is very good, but I'm from Florida. I actually worked, I don't know if you ever went to Tallahassee, a very fun little soda shop, and it was called Lofty Pursuits. And we had Sprecher root beer that was on tap. Ooh. And we were the only place in all of Florida that had that. So it was known for me as wow, that's some top tier root beer. But otherwise it was I'd always drink Barks. That was the good root beer if you're going to go to a convenience store.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree. Root beer can be great. It has to be Barks or a Sprecher.
And then the other one is Diet Coke if I'm feeling nostalgic.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry that I went down a soda rabbit hole. I just
I'm here for it.
Is the audience here for it? That's curious.
I mean, at this point, if they're not, we talk about so much random shit on the show.
Okay, just curious, because I was at first I was what did I just unleash? No. I'm so sorry for this podcast. I'm sorry to you all. I failed you.
Well, one thing I do know that the audience wants to know is that Moody is in lap. She has been for a good 10 minutes.
Oh, Moody, yeah. There's been some good pets. Yeah. It's been a lot of good love given and a lot of good love received. And that's healthy, as we call it.
She's a perfect baby.
Yeah, she really is.
She's clutching your leg. Oh my God.
I'm so happy.
Yep. Well, so I'm really glad to have you on the show because you do so much rad shit. We were talking about it before we were on. We were like, we don't even know what to start with. Pick something.
No. Well, and we met you at Choose Your Mar Adventure, which was some at the birthday show.
So
birthday
fun.
Show.
Birthdays.
And it was really fun. Mm-hmm. I was one of the people whose actual birthday it was that week. I was one of two birthdays that week.
A lot of Aries.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because it was on April 8th and my birthday was April 10th.
Wow.
And then there was someone whose birthday was like that Friday. Something like that. It was a night full of birthdays.
So much to celebrate.
Yeah.
What a lovely night. As we look back. Yes.
No, but tell us about all that you do.
Yeah. I guess the top things that I do. I do stand-up comedy and I run a show called Strip Joker. It's a lot of fun. It's based out of Mary's Attic right now and we do it once a month, but it's a body positive stand-up comedy show. So the idea of it is that comedians, we do our jokes while we in various states of undress, usually in a way that is comfortable for us or might be pushing our limits, but we have a very supportive, really cool audience and they go fucking crazy every time like you take something off and then you get vulnerable. We encourage comedians to do their material about their bodies. That's been something I've been doing for a little over 3 years now. Yeah. So that's been one of my projects. Should I go into the other one or we don't?
Sure.
Well,
go into the other one.
Okay.
And then we'll just kind of like pick and shoot. Well, because keep going.
We've had this problem lately where like we've had, because occasionally for a run of episodes, we'll just be like, yeah, we're talking about this specific event. But now we're just like, we've had a couple episodes now recently where we're just talking to rad folks that are like doing a lot of rad stuff.
Uh-huh.
I keep saying rad, but here we are. But it is interesting because like it's where I know where I want to go with talking to you about is like what kind of drew you to, like, I think this was maybe before we started recording, like carving out what is your like performance profile, as it were, like is very interesting to me.
My performance profile for Strip Joker is in stand-up, like doing stand-up is...
I think just generally, like the Brittany Meyer brand.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, okay.
Just because you do a lot and you said it, you're like carving out that little, you know, niche in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say a very big part of like my niche is empowerment is honestly it. There's like even when I started getting back into stand up, because I did it for a very little bit when I was in Florida. I moved to Chicago, tried to do it here, did not go well, mostly because I didn't know what I was doing or where to go. So I took like a big break. And it wasn't until Kelsey Huff, who runs her own class, I took her class and it kind of put in perspective for me that I'm like, well, what do I even want to do on stage? If I'm going to write a joke, what's it going to be for? Like, what's it going to take for me to leave my apartment, go to an open mic or go do other shows? And I have found that it was like around that time I was coming out as genderqueer. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I have found is like trying to make jokes and try to understand my gender was it was a good way for me to understand it for myself and then also to teach the people around me. So I had a lot of friends that would come out to my comedy shows. And to an extent, I came out to a lot of people that way. Once I was able to kind of find a little space for myself and to realize that I'm like, hey, I can actually get across really important information with humor, I started experimenting a little bit more. So I now have a PowerPoint. It's a fake TED Talk about why we should legalize sex work. And it's probably one of the best things that I've done. But I've also put out it's a PowerPoint and I explain gender identity and like why gender is important through sandwiches is like a big thing. And like I also explain polyamory through like another ridiculous one. So I kind of figured out like a little space for myself with all of this stuff.
So I'm really glad you're bringing up the stuff. The thing that I think is really interesting is when an artist has an opportunity to create a format that is indicative of the art they want to be making, I think it's a really interesting thing to see happen in a city like Chicago, where so many people through various formats and opportunities and things like that are given these opportunities to just like create a thing. And then, and then that thing goes on to be like radical, meaning like it pushes some kind of political norm or, you know, is in some way a critique on the form itself. Like for example, well, let me actually ask a question before I get more into I'm like, what's up? I'm sleepy.
Would you like some Diet Coke?
I could use some Diet Coke. Yeah. I'm not really a big bubbly soda person.
Mm.
Anyway, let me actually ask a question. Okay. I lost both of them. Oh my God. I got so overwhelmed by the Diet Coke thought. Like, I was just like, I have not had. The last time I had Diet Coke, I was 10. And I accidentally drank. Yeah, go for it.
All right. So, I want to kind of zero in on Strip Joker. So, first of all, I would love to hear kind of the inspiration behind that marriage of genre, mm-hmm. because it is a really clever marriage. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, my kind of coping mechanism when I'm feeling vulnerable or uncomfortable is laughter. Mm-hmm. And so being put, you know, being for people where like comedy is their trade and, you know, it is like, you know, in a moment where they're being vulnerable, it is so much easier to be funny.
Yes.
So I hope I didn't just answer the question for you, but I would love to hear where that idea came from.
No, that's actually a very good starting point. So I feel like something that really stuck with me is that I was originally going to go to film school, and I studied film all of high school, and like I was going to be like director and writer and all this other bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching the Academy Awards. Maybe this was 2006 or 2007, but it was a short film that won for best comedic short film, and it was called East Bank Story, and it was all about the West Bank, and like it was very interesting. But the director won, and in his speech was like talking about the Israel-Palestine situation, and one of the things that he did talk about was that I feel like if we can't laugh at it, we can't fix it. And that stuck with me so profoundly, because that's something that, I mean, I feel like everybody empathized with. It was like, oh, if we can make a joke about it, then I mean, maybe I can live with it another day. That's something we can do. I have noticed when I got back into stand-up that one thing almost all comics do is when they get on stage, they make a joke about how they look. That's pretty standard. One of the benefits of doing that is that you can immediately connect with an audience. So that way, if it's like, you see what I see, therefore we both are on the same page. Like, we get it and we immediately connect. Which is I don't want to say a trick, but it's a quick, easy way to be able to make a connection. And sometimes they were people's best jokes. Like, they actually were so much fun. And a lot of times it'll be very self-deprecating, which is a very interesting way of bringing together the body positivity aspect. But I did think it was like between the pairing of the vulnerability of like taking off clothes and removing it and having people accept it, but also the fact that people are laughing because they empathize with it. Not necessarily because, like, that was really the point of Strip Joker, is that it's never your nudity is the butt of the joke. It's the setup. It's right. Not the punchline. And that's like the big thing that I always try to get across. So it's like, I want any comic should be able to do our show, regardless of how they feel about their bodies, if they hate themselves or love themselves, if they want to take anything off or nothing.
So do people typically tailor their acts to the fact that they're removing clothing, or do they do like the set that they're currently working on with disrobing peppered in?
It actually varies. So like, some people are very comfortable with their set and they're just going to do their set, and they might take a couple things off as they kind of go, and that's fun, and it's like, you know, they get into the theme. What we really love is when people do something completely different, or they bring something where it's like they strip to a bit that they have, or they get down to something. And like, we just had Mary Z on, and she had a really great bit about when she was in sleepaway camp, and it was like a Christian sleepaway camp that they made them wear, like, or like the boys couldn't go to the bathroom at the same time as the girls because they might see you in your tweedy like underwear or like whatever nightgowns and stuff, right, like that, and slippers. So she did first, she like stripped down in her whole act. She did her regular stand-up set and she talked about that in it, and then at the end she was like, I'm gonna do something a little raunchy, and she actually put on her like summer camp outfit essentially to go to bed, and it was so great. So sometimes people like definitely tailor things, and like, yeah, our audience goes crazy for it. It's honestly whatever people want, and I guess that's also part of it too, is that maybe it sounds like a unique concept of like stand-up comedy and taking off clothes, but the thing is, like, there is a similar-ish show in a lot of other cities. Mm-hmm. None of them are a body positive show. A lot of them are, we're an underwear show. But yeah, as a queer person hearing about these things, I'm like, I would never go to a straight show with a straight audience, get on stage, talk about being genderqueer in my underwear. No, that's absolutely does not feel safe to me. So kind of creating our space and making it body positive, and everybody that comes in there is behind our mission, that I feel like that's why people would be more willing to do our show than almost any other.
Mm-hmm. I really love that about kind of like underground Chicago comedy, is that there are so many spaces where, like, the end goal is the best comedy you're going to find. Mm-hmm. But the mechanism and the lens that they view it, you know, that they view it with, is inclusivity, is safety, is no harassment. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that in other cities you tend to not find.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. I mean, I want to say that it was like almost every city should have some sort of subculture. But part of me is like, have I found that everywhere? I don't think so. So it does vary.
To be fair, the comedy scene I'm most familiar with is Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And to a small extent, Milwaukee. But the Milwaukee comedy scene isn't, I perceive, the most inclusive. But
yeah, I don't know much about Milwaukee. I only know like a couple buds that are kind of up there. That's about it. Yeah. And yeah, I can't vouch.
Yeah, there are a lot of steeples in Milwaukee, but
I want to talk about one of the things that we talk about a lot is like artistic license, and one of the things that I feel is a running theme is this idea of having a blank slate and like working and creating. Like, do you remember the format building process for Strip Joker? Like, was it immediate that you were like, it needs to be these pieces, this format, this structure, or did it take more time to figure out how you wanted to think about like what the space would
be? Man, I feel like it's changed so much, because when we initially started, it was at Gorilla Tango Theater. I specifically wanted to work with a place that was used to doing burlesque, because I want to make sure there was a dressing room, a second door from the outside, so no people can't just see in. Like, there were certain safety features I wanted to have that a lot of burlesque venues did have, so I was like, maybe we should go there. I also didn't want it to be in a traditional comedy venue, because I feel like that's also like sets a very different expectation. So I wanted to make sure of that. We did our first three shows at Gorilla Tango. Awful. Or like, the show itself ended up being great, like all the people, the performers delivered as hell, but it, like, the space itself was just terrible. The people we worked with were awful, and I think it was like after our first like show and like we sold out that people were just kind of like, good for you, but why are you here? And I was just like, what else is there? And then people told me about Uptown Underground. So Uptown Underground had that back room that was like 50 seats. And I was like, you know what? This could be a really good place for us to grow. We'd be once a month, and this would be like a nice little like, fortunately, we could hopefully sell out every month, and that would be very nice. And it should be a good little more intimate time. So we moved up there. We were there for almost a year, but we were selling out very consistently. And like, they loved our product. They loved what they were seeing. And then they were like, can we move you to the main stage? And we were a little worried about moving to the main stage because we were going from 50 seats to 150 seats. And we were like, we're not so sure about this, but they gave us a very good deal. And they were like, we really love your mission and what you do. And you're so different. You're our only comedy show here, like, we want you to have the space. So we moved out there, which I would say it's kind of varied a little bit, because when I was in that back room, it was 50 seats. It was very intimate. It was very DIY. Like, it was all of our friends that were running our camera and like everything. Whereas now when we were moving to the big theater, it kind of changed. It looked very regal. It was very exciting. And I feel like it did have a different feeling for performers, which I thought was very neat, that I think we became very quickly a show that everybody wanted to do, because we had an awesome videographer. We had an awesome photographer, that it was like, not only do you feel great when you did the show, you're going to like feel great looking back on the photos and feeling like you really crushed it and you did an amazing job and you contributed to something that was bigger than any other comedy show you've probably done, which is great. So now we moved to Mary's Attic only because Uptown Underground closed. Otherwise, I would have stayed there forever. It was my favorite venue, and all the people that worked there were fantastic.
Right.
So we moved to Mary's Attic, and I feel like it's kind of like a weird marriage between like the main stage space of Uptown Underground and the back room, because it has the feel of the back room where it's a little more raw. It's very DIY feeling. We updated it. I would say like also for like the show itself, that it was like, we knew we wanted to be very stand up. And at first we had some people that would play around, or they would do some sort of audience interaction thing, and it was great. And we were like, oh, maybe we should have some sort of game or something that people did. But then we're like, you know what? People are taking off their clothes. They're already doing a lot. Unless they felt comfortable, they brought forth the idea. So ever since then, we've been like, if you want pasties, let us know. If you need ideas, let us know. If you want to workshop things, like, we'd be glad to. We just want to put on the best show possible. So that kind of started. And then we did realize, like, we do really well when we have like one wild card slot. So somebody that does some sort of variety or something that's a little offbeat. Mm-hmm. And we've had some amazing people, like genuinely some of the best acts, like Evan and Mary Jane, who are just phenomenal musical comedy duo. Nikki G, who is a fantastic spoken word artist. Like, she did great thing. Like, it was like once we started incorporating, because body positivity beyond just comedy of right. like what other art forms are a part of this, that started getting so exciting and fun. And then we formed a spinoff show for a little bit, which was a variety strip joker show, which only lasted a little bit, but we're going to be bringing it back for like certain one-off shows. Right. So yeah, and now it's also evolved that it was like we moved to Mary's Attic, and now we partner with local organizations. So we try to promote them, like, because we have like a captive audience of like 100 people. So we get people from like the National Abortion Fund. They were just in for our last show. We had Brave Space Alliance in. We've had a bunch of like really great orgs. So they get to talk about it. And then now we encourage people to, if they really like a joke or if people take clothing off, to like take a dollar, crumple it up, and like throw it at the stage. And then everything that is left, we give to the org. So it's been like a really fun additional layer to the show that's only been added since January, but it's ended up kind of giving back a little bit more to the community mm-hmm. and kind of creating more of the strip joker community that we've been trying to do for the last 3 years.
I love that. And I love the way that you think about it. I know the thing, another thing that I really am always curious about is context, like especially context in genre, I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I know that you mentioned is not wanting to, I mean, and maybe I'm paraphrasing, but like essentially like it like working past the traditions of like burlesque and the traditions of the comedy scene. Like, in what ways do you feel like strip joker, like, is there a balance there? Is it a complete rejection of what has come in other genres before it? Or is there a degree to which you feel like there's some bar, like some like pulling from traditions of any kind?
Yeah, I would say like it's weird to think about, but it's like strip joker is genuinely a comedy show that feels exactly like a burlesque show, where it's like everybody is there with the same mission, that they're body positive, less pervy probably, actually, mm-hmm. for the most part, that part, especially because it was like we don't promise anybody's taking things off kind of thing, but it was like it's body positive, some people are down, whereas burlesque, like, you're guaranteed to see some titties, like you're mm-hmm. gonna get some freaks. So I would say that it's very similar with like the hootin', the hollerin', we have a kitten as well. So I feel like we kind of marry like that form of it. But we also have like a fantastic host that it's also more word based. Like, I think that's like the interesting thing, that it was like burlesque is very like physical, whereas we're all spoken.
That's rad. And I think it's such an interesting thing, because in so many ways, when something is a production or performance that is like evolutionary to what has been done in the past, like, it is just so interesting to me to think about how to see it make sure to grow in the ways that it needs to, you know, like, in what ways do you feel like you've found success in making sure to keep like the safe space nature and trying to keep like people able to feel comfortable?
I think that's how we've been able to secure as many of the comics as we have, that it was like we try very specifically, that was like we want to get people that are not represented in mainstream media of like body positivity. Mm-hmm. So we do mostly feature queer people, people of color. Those are like our main, and like, of course, female identified people. So we have this beautiful range, as well as like we have like one token guy, if that, we kind of throw in there, but they're phenomenal if we do. So sorry, I feel like I got like lost on this tangent that no, sorry, this is like why we have the editor, right?
Well, also tangents are like entirely the show. I feel like people that listen to Scoppy Radio, if you're listening at this point, like you know that it's just, you know, people sitting and tangenting it left and right.
Yeah.
But I do think it's, I mean, because that's the thing, right? Like, it's so hard to, because how long has Strip Joker been going for?
Almost 3.5 years.
That's like a big deal.
It's pretty crazy.
To still feel like it's you've built a, because it's not just, oh, I'm producing a show. Oh, good mm-hmm. marketing. What this and the other?
Well, like, when it's rooted evolving.
When it's rooted in a good community.
Yes. which is above all, which I think that was the point, that it was like, not only do we want to make this space safe for these people that would like normally not feel comfortable probably to take off clothes in a public setting, but it's a standard that we've almost created for ourselves at this point, that it was like, if you're an audience member, you've been to one of our shows, you know what we're about, that it was like, I would like you to buy a ticket, not know any of the credits or anybody that's going to be on the show, and know that you're going to enjoy it, to an extent that it was like, one of the reasons I also made this show is that when I was first getting back into comedy, it was the worst to go to open mics and to go to so many shows that suck, because you would always hear something racist, transphobic, sexist. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point of just like, even if I went to a show and I heard one person make a sexist or transphobic remark, then I'm like, this ruined my whole fucking night. Like, what did I even do here? That it was like, and I also doubt the judgment of the person that booked them, that it was like, why were they even on the show? That it got to a point that I'm like, you know what? I would rather put on a show where I know for sure I'm not going to hear any of those things, and I can promise other audience members they're not, and that in itself is worth a ticket price. Mm-hmm. So that is another big reason why I founded this show.
Yeah, well, and I love that, because I think it speaks to something very true, which is that the like unpacking bigotry and homophobia and heteronormativity and this and that and the other and every terrible thing, like, mm-hmm. is oh my God, I just blanked out what I was saying. It's more than just the one joke. It's a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. And figuring out how to, when you're producing something like this, figuring out how to work from the root rather than the, what it's like, organic, like it's you can't just apply a band-aid. You have to figure out what the illness is. Mm-hmm. And I think is seeing more and more folks making things that are working from a place of going the opposite direction rather than the other. I mean, do you think that is just a product of like you as an individual, like if you were going to make something, then it had to work in that direction? Or do you think, like, how much of it do you think is that? And then or just like the culture, like the time that we're living in, like the city of Chicago itself, like,
I want to say a lot of it is shifting, because I would say I'm not hearing as much horrible things as I have been hearing when I first started doing comedy over like maybe closer to 5 years ago in Chicago. So I want to say part of it is just like those people that are saying those things aren't getting booked anymore. Like they're like, yeah, slowly getting weeded out, and better people that are doing more progressive and better jokes in general are moving ahead. And that's great. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that. And I think that is a lovely system that has helped a lot of that shit die. So that's good. And I do think that it was like, I mean, you kind of get rewarded when it's like, yeah, you write like a really clever bit about something that's really complicated, and something that's like, Adam Burke has an amazing bit about gentrification. And same with like Dave Hellum, both of them, they're brilliant. So it's like when they keep doing this stuff and everyone's like, I can't wait for you to do a show like my show in Logan Square and do that bit. People are going to love this. Like, this is so important for them to hear, that it's like they're going to be some of the top comics and keep getting booked, and people want to hear this stuff.
Well, and it's also what I like about this mentality is that it's not a, we need to tear down, like we need to tear down and start over. It's like, okay, I see that. Like, let's use the infrastructure that we have to our advantage and just inject the kind of temperament and the kind of humor we want to see into that system. Because I think it would be really tempting in a bevy of like a problematic industry. Not to say that all comedy is problematic, but there is some, mm-hmm. It can be, as all industries can be. It would be very easy to be like, well, whatever. Like, it's just a flawed industry. We can't do anything about it.
There are a lot of those people still, though. So that does exist.
But I think that seeing... But there are people who love it. You know, there are people like you who are like, but I want to see it succeed, but I want it to be better.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'm so happy that it was like Strip Joker is a space where we get to do that. It's so wonderful. And it's reaffirming too, this, like, people come up to me because it's like a lot of people that want to go see comedy, but they don't know what's safe for them. Yeah. Like, it's so true that I'm so glad that they come to these shows and they enjoy the hell out of it. And it is so rewarding to have that. I love it.
Yeah. We should talk about Claw, because one of the things that's actually really fun is that we did like a short minute long interview with someone coming out of at C2E2, coming out of the panel, the Claw panel, 2 L's.
Yeah, C-L-L-A-W.
I have to always remind myself that. That's why I'm prefacing it with that, because I'm always like, two L's. Mm. But yeah, Chicago
League of Lady Arm Wrestlers. Yes. That's been a big passion. Actually, I got into that before I did stand-up.
Cool.
Yeah, I've been doing that maybe like a year and a half after I moved to Chicago. But it's like, I love professional wrestling for a very long time. It's a big passion of mine. And when I moved to Chicago, I feel like every like 3 years or so, I go, you know what? Maybe I could go to wrestling school. And then I look into it and I think about it and I work out for like a couple weeks. And then I'm like, I could not stand being in pain the rest of my life. Like, I love my knees. I can't do this. So Claw is an amazing outlet where it is much less physically demanding while still being all the gimmicks and all the fun. And that's my favorite part of wrestling anyway. So it all worked out.
Well, the thing that I think is really interesting is having it at C2E, like that y'all did C2E2. Mm-hmm. That is like something I touch on a lot, is this idea of subcultures, like being more Venn diagrammy than we think.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, I think it's so interesting. Well, because the person that we talked to was Captain Philippines.
Yeah, Junella.
Yes.
Yes.
And that is like the nerd culture aspect overlapping with the like people that love wrestling in their youth. Like, I think that's so interesting. Like,
yes.
What, yeah, like how.
I do think it's also funny that you say that, because it's like my character, just so you know, it's a Stone Cold Jane Austen.
Yeah.
But it's always fun that it was like, because my manager, Natalie, who is just a brilliant person. And but she always tells me, she was just kind of like, she does like a lot of crafting stuff and she works at like an Akira, which is like great. And she also like used to work at Beatniks. But all the time when she would tell people about Stone Cold Jane Austen, or she'd find like a new piece for like my costume, that it was like, she was like, I'd always connect with a lot of horse girls that really want to talk to me about Jane Austen, less about the Stone Cold part. But it was just like, yeah, it was like, how fun. And like,
that totally makes sense to me. Like,
but yes,
this is always a thing that I feel like I'm struggling with this in this podcast, is where I'm like, I have a theme, like a thematic thought that I don't have in good words yet. So I'm just going to ramble at you about it until I like get it. But it's just this idea of like, it's such a thing, especially, and the reason I'm prefacing with all of this is because, you know, a lot of people are in this space where they are creatives and they're working in multiple genres, or they're working with projects that are these kind of hybridization of genre.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're carving and carving, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute. Like, so here's the actual question. Do you find that there is overlap between people that are into Strip Joker and people that are into Claw?
I've actually got one of my other producers for Strip Joker, Caitlin Grissom. I got her into Claw. She's been like wanting to do it for like a while, and I finally like got her in the door. I was surprised by how few people involved in stand-up are a part of Claw. However, there's a lot of people that are involved in like music performance and burlesque. And we did have a few Derby girls for like a little while. That was like an interesting thing. But I was just kind of shocked by like the difference. And to be fair, there was like in Claw, there's almost no talking of like into a microphone or anything like that. So it kind of makes sense to me that like, oh, comics are pretty introverted anyway. And like, you know, unless they have like complete control, like I could see more improvisers being a part of it, but I don't see a lot of them. Maybe some of them will be like managers and like they're kind of like on board with that too. But definitely mostly performers are like a huge part of Claw.
Mm-hmm. So what is the structure of Claw?
Oh man, it's chaos. It's it is so fun. So first we get to like Logan Square Auditorium sometime around like 7. Doors don't open till like 9 or 9:30. The show starts, I think, around 10. We have an amazing drag queen. She sings the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, yeah. And it's great because the last several Claws, like everyone's like all the wrestlers have taken knees, and it's just like beautiful. And then we have merch on sale. So like once you come in the door, we have Claw Bucks. So Claw Bucks are like the currency of Claw. So it's like if you want to bet on the wrestlers, because we have prizes. If they win, you get something good, like a cool massage or like a dinner or something like that. And if they lose, you get like a dollar store prize, like a douche or something. And but it was like you $1 is one Claw Buck, and you tear it. It's like a raffle ticket, and you put it into the wrestlers that you want to bet on. And then they, after whoever won, you get pulled out of the winning bucket, and then the loser out of the loser bucket. And then we keep going. So there's a giant bracket for Claw. So all wrestlers wrestlers end up wrestling twice at least. So we have like the main bracket and then we have an underdog bracket. So if you get out in the first round, you go to the underdog, and sometimes, and the underdog does go all the way up to the final match. So you can play it as Stone Cold has done many times before to get out and go to the underdog bracket and then work your way up that way instead of going against maybe some of the stronger people in the very top. So it's honestly, it's so much fun storytelling. A lot of it is done on the spot because sometimes you don't know, usually know who you're going to fight in that first round, but then you don't know anything else. So I can usually figure out with my partner that I'm like, okay, do you want to win or you want me to win? Can I do this and that? Or would you be okay if I did this? And then from there, like I can figure out, I'm like, okay, well then once we get in the space, I'm like, okay, according to the bracket, I fight this person next. And then I can figure out what happens next. But you have no idea. Usually by the time it gets to intermission, no fucking idea what's going to happen. Like, we don't choose a winner beforehand. Like, all of it is very much in the moment. Like, all of it, it's so organic, and it's so much fun for that.
So it's not like WWE arm wrestling, like it's actual arm wrestling.
A lot of it is very real. Okay. So it's like, it's honestly a matter of like what you agree with your partner, because sometimes like Janella, for example, has tendonitis. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if like Janella's like, hey, my arm's acting up, like I'm just going to like lose or I'm going to get out or whatever, you can move on, but let's like, you know, make it look good. Mm-hmm. Then we'll do that kind of thing. So sometimes we decide it. Sometimes we genuinely go like, hey, I want to win. And like, yeah, I also want to win. It's like, then I guess we're going for real. We're going to see who wins. And then that's like how it happens. And sometimes people are just kind of like, I'd rather, like, I'll go out, but I want to lose this way. And like, that's also totally fine and cool. I've gotten disqualified so many times. And it's really been, oh, it's the best. I brought a piece of a bookshelf once and hit someone with it. And like, oh, that was my favorite claw. That was the best one.
So there's not a lot of talking, but is it like mostly like showboating?
It's a lot of showboating. We do have somebody with a microphone. Like we have a couple announcers and they're going, so if we want to be like, hey, I'm going to do this spot, like I want you to make a big deal of it. Or if you want to give them some puns or some stuff to like be like, oh, I think it was like maybe one of the first claws I did, I was against like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That was it. Okay. I was like, where's the pun?
I was also waiting for the pun. I was okay.
Even I was like, I know it's funny somewhere. There it is. Yes. I was against her. And I remember that it was like, we were playing it in such a way that she was going to be the bad guy. And I remember that it was like, I had a copy of like, it wasn't a Jane Austen book. It was an Oliver... Now Stone, who's the other famous British author named Oliver Twist? Who wrote it? Who
wrote that one? Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens. It was a Charles Dickens book. That's it. Like, thank you.
Oliver Cromwell.
We got here. Again, not a horse girl. Do not know any of this stuff. We gave her like a copy because we brought up a copy of one of his books, and she like threw it at me. So it's like the announcer like, oh, she threw the book at Stone Cold. And like, so we like would build it up like that way. So we would often like bring like a bunch of things, and like Galfieri is like a character. So it was like we once brought like a head of lettuce that was like if we end up fighting like Gal, that it was like we were going to like do a whole bit with that. So it's like I feel like my managers and I, we just kind of gather a bunch of props and ideas, and like we'll see what happens once we get in the space. We just kind of give ourselves a little freedom to play.
Well, I really, so how long has Claw been going?
Claw, oh my god, over like 10 years.
I just want, the thing that I know I want to ask about is just like, I know so many projects that people will work on that are great projects, but once it passes that like 2-year mark, like I don't know if it's the thing that I think is very interesting is, do you count it's these projects' longevity to how fresh they are conceptually, or do you think that there's more to it than that?
Oh, there's so much more to it than that. Well, I feel like, because like Strip Joker is always evolving, and I feel like we get new producers and we bring new energy on, and like that part's great. With Claw, I love it too, because it was like, I feel like the more comfortable I've gotten, the more I want to push it. So like, this will be a little sneak peek, but we're doing like a fundraiser show because we're a part of Sideshow Theater. So we're doing that on Sunday. There's a big fundraiser thing, and it's going to be at this cute little flower market. So we're doing some exhibition matches. And I was like, I really want to do something like above and beyond for this. So we're going to have our very first cage match for Claw.
Shut up.
So in my car right now, I just bought a large dog kennel, and I'm going to have us crawl inside and have like our first cage match inside of there. So I feel like it was like, once we start giving ourselves permission to have this kind of fun and to go crazy with it, that's when it gets so good. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like another thing that was like my friends out in Portland that we just did that show that you guys probably saw on my Instagram. But it was like, they have I want to do it here, but I feel like I should do it as like an offshoot of Claw. But they have a wrestling league and it's called Plow. It's like Portland Legends of Wrestling. But the gimmick of it is that they lost their wrestling license. So they're not actually allowed to wrestle. So it's mostly improv and it's mostly like storylines and they do dumb things, which is why we were like chugging LaCroix and things like that. So it was like they do like shit like that. So I'm like, I really want to do something like that with Claw. So that way it's like, again, less physically demanding, all the fun gimmicks. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was just kind of like, oh man, it would be so, I want to bring that here. I would love to do a Claw thing, which would be a little bit more scripted and storied. Like it would have to be like, this person's going to win, but you guys have to figure out how to get there.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. Well, because you mentioned Oscar Boy.
There are dogs. The cats sit in the windows, and then neighboring dogs claw at our windows.
Oh, okay. I was like, that was a lot of noise for... Yeah.
I don't know if it got picked up by the... But mm-hmm. there was animal scuffling.
Well, I want to touch on... Because I know that you were mentioning that you went to school for, like, film.
In high school. I was originally going for that. And then I was an alternate for the film program at Florida State. So I didn't actually get in. So I went to school for interior design. Was the next thing? Yeah, I was going to go for their BFA in set design. They got rid of it that year. So I was like,
oh God.
Yeah, so I was like alternate for the film school, got rid of my major. So I'm like, I guess I'll do interior design. Yeah. And that took like a year to get into anyway. So it was just kind of like, all right, so interior design. Okay. Film was a big part of my background.
Do you still do interior design?
I work in it. Yeah, I do retail design. Yeah.
Very cool.
I've been doing it.
Yeah. Noted.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the thing I was getting at is the storytelling piece is very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the long-term storytelling, like, is that something that you feel like you've had a lot of work with, or do you look forward to continue like working in?
Oh, I think that's my favorite part though, is that it was like constantly, because it was like my managers who are so great, again, Natalie, but it was like we won Claw, it was last summer, but it was like after that, like she bought us a bunch of fake fur, so she was just like, now that we won, we wear fur. And I was just like, so we started building that as a part of it. And she got me like a new entrance jacket that I would like wear and everything. Like, it was just like, she does such a great job building on it costume wise. And like story wise, I also, because it was like after that Claw, one of the matches I was fighting Elton Braun, who was in the final match with me last time. And I was like, listen, I'm already champion. And like, it was like maybe our third match in. And I was just like, I won already. So I'm like, if you want to move on, I'll let you move on. And Elton was like, yeah, for sure. So I was like, okay, here's the thing though. I'm fucking champion. So I'm not going to go out easy. And because I fought you last time and won, we need to do something different. So then I'd be like, here's what I'm going to do. I think what we're going to have is like my managers kidnap you. So you guys will go up in the balcony and then I'll just pretend that you just didn't show up. So that way I can move on. And then it was like, it turned into like a whole scuffle and like all the announcers were making a big deal. And then they're like, where is Elton Braun? And then it turns out like they were yelling from like the balcony and like, I got disqualified and we turned into like a big thing. And like, I tried to like flip the table, but it was like nailed down. It was, they didn't tell me that part. I thought I was going to be able to flip it. So it's like that was a really good one. My favorite one was probably against this roller girl. Her name was Vigil Annie. And she was the reigning champion. And I was against her in the first round. And I was like, well, this fucking sucks. Like, as I have to go against the champ. And I know she doesn't want to lose. And I'm sure she is pretty strong. But I was like, you know, it would be much better if I pulled like a real Stone Cold Jane Austen thing. Like what I would do and play like super heel. That I was like, I'll bring that bookshelf piece. So I brought that. And I was like talking to her. I was like, what if I were to hit you before like the match even begins? I hit you. I get disqualified. You now have an injury that you have to sell for the rest of the show. And like, that's what you have to overcome. So it's like those storytelling moments are my favorite part of Claw. Yeah. And like when we get to build that. And I feel like sometimes like some people are just more in like the in the moment in the gimmick and like doing a little fun bit. But it was like, I love when it's just like, make me worse. I want to be such a good heel for Claw. And I feel like the storytelling aspect is how I get that good.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Just because I think there's like a myth in the improv-y adjacent spaces that you can't have that, but that's like very cool to hear.
And improv, you mean just like because you're starting like new scenes constantly? Yeah. Or? Okay.
Well, and just like I, you know, this is a random example, but I always just think about too, like one of the things Maureen and I both studied opera, and one of the things that we do a lot of is work with like art songs, and they're just 3-minute songs and it's just one song. But like, it's not just like story, like long-term story, like thinking of things in a way that is not just a one, just not just thinking of one round of a competition. Like it's more like, I just think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't have an actual question.
I do. So you keep mentioning managers.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm like, is that, have you like gone out and found people to like help you with this character, or is that like built into the structure of Claw?
So fortunately, I know like the perfect freaks for me. So it worked out great for me to have my managers. So the way like Claw typically works in addition to the wrestlers is that we have managers. So it's also very similar to WWE for that. So you can have like a valet or a wrestler or like a manager, and they hold your bucket essentially for like all your collecting. And so like, and they're also supposed to do a lot of talking for you, a lot of yelling. So it's like your character could be silent if you want. Wanted, or like my two managers, I have Mr. Darcy and Mr. Wickham, and they're both great. They're great at yelling. They're great at getting people to bet on me. They're great at costuming. They come up with awesome ideas. Like, we're truly such a good team together. And that's what like really makes it sing. And then there's also, I mean, people do other great things too, with like their managers. We did have like Winifred Sanderson for like a little while. She was also a Derby girl. And then she had, was it Billy? He was like the, like one of the managers, but he was like just holding her stuff and holding the book and everything for her. And like, yeah. So it's like people do a really good job playing with like the different managers that they have, and it definitely adds some like depth to the character, which is also just the best part.
That's wild.
Uh-huh. It's so fun.
Has it always been like kind of a gathering place for the queer community? Like, was it founded by queer folks and like that was always the intention, or was it not that, or did it just kind of evolve into like a very safe space for that community?
I think it may have evolved into it. I know they started with Sideshow Theater, and I'm pretty sure they're a pretty queer theater group. They're very, very cool. Kelsey Miller is one of the people that helped founded Claw. And I don't know much about her gender identity or sexuality. She's very cool. She has a sibling who was also a very big part of Claw, and they've moved out to Portland, but they were Lumberjack Jill when they were a part of it. And honestly, they also, I remember when I first started, they actually had inclusivity training, and that was what Mar did. Mar came in and taught, which is how I was like, this is now how I understand gender, and this is the word for it. So it was like, I feel like Mar actually put so much in perspective for me and helped me understand myself in a large part. Cool. And that really kicked off a large part of my gender journey that I brought to comedy. So I'll start. Thanks, Mar. All comes back to Mar. So I feel like the Lumberjack Jill specifically wanted to have this training because it was like so many queer people were coming to Claw, and we wanted to make sure we were being more inclusive, especially to other wrestlers. And they were definitely genderqueer. So they're like, I want to make sure you understand my pronouns and use them correctly too. So I would say for the most, like everybody that works on Claw is awesome about it. We check in about pronouns when we introduce ourselves. Like everybody is very respectful. And like, of course, we're also very like, what's it called? It's like intimacy choreographers, where like we're very conscious about having permission to touch. And it's just a fantastic group.
I love that. The fact that you bring in like experts and people that are willing to play, like be that like authority figure to it almost, even, because it is totally one thing to just do inclusion and another thing entirely to like educate and build those structural things. Like, that's so important. And what do you think has made it such that in Claw and in just kind of like your work in general has made it such that, is that easy for you to facilitate or be around? Or do you think that it's a matter of essentially, where I'm really getting at is, how do you think more outlets can make sure that when they do inclusion, that they do it the right way?
I guess it's interesting because another queer comic friend of mine did mention this to me about Strip Joker, is that they were like, Well, he said he was just like, I don't understand how you've managed to get like all these great queer comics and queer people together and all of this happens. And like, you seem to have done this without any energy or effort. I was like, there's a lot of energy or efforts, yeah. But it did happen. But I definitely will say that it was like, it was always the intention and goal, but it was like, I feel like it's just something that I live. And I'm hoping that it was like, maybe people are just like, I hope this is maybe the case, that it was like maybe the atmosphere that I've been able to cultivate, as well as maybe my personality and the way that I treat people, that hopefully that has kind of created this space that has brought us all together. But I think maybe this is also part of it, is like I actually have been working quite a bit with like diversity and inclusion in my workplace, because they're always going on about like, oh, we need, like, we are going to be more diverse. And it's like, none of this matters if you're not being inclusive. Mm-hmm. There was like the fact that there's no protocol for having pronouns in our email signatures. Nobody, the fact that I have been misgendered by almost every one of my, I could count on one hand the amount of people that haven't misgendered me. And that's huge. That was just like, it kind of sucks. And I've been learning a little bit about that I've also found that it was like being almost, I don't want to say overly conscious, but the fact that it was like, these things are so important to me and making sure that people that walk into my space are going to feel comfortable and feel accounted for and heard, that I think having that energy is what makes people feel so welcome and creates and makes it the space that it is.
Well, and it's also, but it's also very much like the burden of education is very much a thing that I'm constantly learning to understand and consider, like, that willingness to be able to educate, especially at your workplace, like, about your experience, I think is so, I always enter this point in the podcast because I always want to ask about it, because I want to make sure if there are people that are listening, like, how have you found the, maybe like strength is the wrong word, but like willingness to take on that role?
So, when I first did this, the thing is that I knew that this was a job that I wanted to be at for a long time. And I started about a year ago and I was like, listen, if this is a job I want to be at, then I want to be out and open here. And I hope that it's like, it's going to take some time and energy and effort, but I want people to catch up and get there. But it's not going to happen if I don't be the change, and I'm not going, I need to be out. So I tried to Google how to come out at your office. Did no articles, surprisingly. They're all about like how to come out on top. And I actually wrote my own Medium piece about how come out about being gender neutral pronouns and using them, which is fun and good. And I submitted it to HR. They said, we will paraphrase this for some people. My boss actually did like a really nice thing where she sat down like almost everybody that I would be working with and was like, we have a new person starting. They are genderqueer. They use they, them pronouns. This is their website. Like, learn a little bit about them, like educate yourself a little bit. And I mean, honestly, she did pretty much all she probably could. It was like her limited knowledge and also like what information she had, but she's been lovely to even try, and I think that's been really great. There have been other moments where I realized it was like I met one other genderqueer art director at my job, and I remember like being in a meeting and like we sat down and everything and we all like said our names, and I was like, but I don't know like I was just like so hurt that I was just like, this was gonna be a great moment. And then the next meeting we both happened to be there and like we were waiting on one more person to show up, and I was like, you know what, I just need to do this. And I just went up, I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm Brittany, they them. And they were like, so she, and I'm like, my name's Len, and I use they them and he him pronouns. And like I was waiting for everybody else to just be like, oh yeah, I'm like blah blah blah, I use this and this. And then everyone was just silent, and I was just like, all right, if anybody else would like to speak up, or you're gonna be stuck in your gender until further note. And like everyone's just like, oh, okay. And it was like, but it's such a good moment for Len, and I could tell that it was like, I don't know how many people have ever asked them, like even in our workplace. And it was just kind of, so I have found like being that change has been huge, and making sure I'm going out of my way, like the same way I feel like with Strip Joker, of like, hey, if you want to create that inclusive space, be that inclusive space. Like you have to exert that energy and put that forethought into it. Which I think there was one other cool point to make about this. It's gone. But it is something I've been trying to navigate and working towards, and it's a process.
Yeah. Well, I know one last thing. We have a few minutes left before we have a few minutes left.
I didn't remember. Sorry.
No, go for it.
Oh, this is also something that I've been trying to like talk about with diversity and inclusion with my workplace. And I had a great meeting with my boss about it, was the idea that it was like, I feel like it's more important for me to be out because this will definitely pave the way for other queer people to be able to be out at work too. Especially that I realize that my job, other people could be there without having like exactly advertising experience the same way I do not. So that's possible. I think it really hit me when I realized I was trying to go on other queer dates. And I think this job has gentrified me out of queer date times, which is roughly 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Like, it just, I can't do it anymore.
Right.
And, but a lot of that is because, like, yeah, they all work at Whole Foods or they're all baristas. Like, these are the jobs that a lot of queer people have because these are the spaces that will honor their pronouns or that will have, like, it was just like, that it really hit me that I was like, yeah, I don't see a lot of professional queers because they, a lot of them don't feel safe in these environments.
Yeah.
So I think when that really hit me.
Well, and that, because, so that's the thing with, like, so much of office culture is, like, most of the time, the exec board are mostly just white dudes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, of course, it's no more. I don't know at what point it became very clear to me that, like, if you want to see meaningful, like, inclusivity and you know, like, actually unpacking structural racism and sexism, like, it has to come from putting the decisions into the hands of the people that you want to see better represented.
Yes.
Like, you can't, like, it's not going to come from the same system.
Which has also been, like, a big side project at my work right now, is that I've been trying to create essentially an ally guide that I was like, listen, I know you're not going to put in the work to actually learn these terms and figure this shit out, but I'm going to write it all down for you and hand it to you. And if you do not learn this, then you're out of here, fella. Like, sorry. Like, if you fuck up once after this, you're done. Like, yeah. I have no sympathy anymore.
Well, so the last thing I kind of want to ask you about before we go into plug time is one of the things we always ask about is the city of Chicago and how it has affected your work. And so I'm curious, like, for you, do you feel like you would be making the work that you're making if you were in another city?
Yeah, I feel like maybe we touched on this, like, right before we started recording, but it was like, I feel like all the things that I really like and want to do is, like, I need, like, exactly 12 other weirdos to like make it happen. That was like, if I didn't have other people to do claw with, then it was like, I guess I'd have to be a professional wrestler in Florida and figure that shit out, and that would suck. So it was like, there would be that thing. And, like, Strip Joker, I couldn't imagine it could exist in another bigger city, but I think about it all the time. That was like, Chicago is such a great place for it. Like, it could definitely work in New York and LA. I feel like those are very saturated markets, but I feel like we've really found a perfect spot for us here. So I think Chicago has shaped me in the ways that it's also being from Florida, that it was like, I moved here so excited just because it was like all these opportunities and people and buildings with marble in them, that I was just like, I could do whatever. Like, I was like, I don't need permission from anybody to do this thing. I just have to put in that energy and work and it can happen. Yeah. And that was so inspiring to realize that that was what you can do here.
I love that. I think that all this, like, especially coming, being from originally New York, like, I think that so many people go to New York City with this mindset of like, oh, I want to see myself up on, you know, I don't know, Times Square or something. But like the parallel of that to Chicago is exactly how you said, like, there's a degree to which there's a blank slate that I can make something and figure out what, if I'm going to make something, what is it? You know, I think that's so powerful. And like, I thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm so excited to be here, excited to be in Chicago. I love it all. So yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and thank you so much for being on the podcast. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, so fun.
The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like letting folks know where they can learn more about your upcoming performances, if that were a thing, if you were involved in multiple performances outlets. Otherwise, we love hearing any shout-outs to the folks that are doing dope work or any content you're consuming personally, music, self-care, otherwise, music, movies, TV shows, things like that.
Oh, okay. Couple plugs here. First, I want to plug, let you all know about Strip Joker. So we have a bunch of upcoming shows, and then we have a Claw show. Claw will be July 27th. That'll be Claw 33. It's going to be a big ass blowout, really worth coming. We actually have a bunch of Strip Joker shows lined up. So we have one that'll be happening at Steppenwolf Theater, which is like a really crazy runoff.
Cool.
We're really excited about it. We have two Pride shows. So that'll be one at Steppenwolf. That's going to be our Variety Pride show. So it's going to be very fun. It's going to be Saturday, June 1st. Then we also have a regular Pride show. That'll be a Mary's Attic, and that'll be June 15th. So two times to see us in June, the 1st and the 15th. And then in July, we also have a show on July 13th at Mary's Attic in a regular location. And we're doing a really cool pop-up with a body positive period underwear brand. That's going to be July 20th. It's with Nick's Underwear. They are wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah, based out of Toronto. They're doing a pop-up here, and we're going to be doing a show with them. Cool. So, yeah, so we have some cool things in the works for that. And stay tuned. Like our Facebook page for Strip Joker. So it should be Strip Joker, facebook.com/Strip Joker. Our Instagram is strip_joker. And our website is stripjokercomedy.com, because just stripjoker.com is porn.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, and a little plug for something really great. If you haven't watched Tuca and Birdie yet, watch Tuca and Birdie.
Oh, so can you tell me, is that the same, like, what's the carryover from BoJack Horseman?
It's the same artist.
Gotcha.
Who created it. So she created BoJack, and there was like one other thing. But it's like the beautiful thing about Tuca and Birdie is like this amazing crossover of like BoJack, Broad City, and Rocco's Modern Life.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, because like I really love BoJack Horseman, but that sounds like what?
It's way more whimsical,
yeah.
Way more femme, and it's way funnier than BoJack.
Yeah.
Way less cynical.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's very real.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Uh-huh. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We post all of our articles and podcast episodes there. You can also keep up with us on social media on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Scopy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, which we just changed to Secret after the great Indonesian Facebook group attack of 2019. We're recording on the 16th.
Yeah.
So that apparently, do you know the story? Do you know the actual story of that?
I bet we can cover it later.
I mean, you know, I say we take a break from the part that we do identically every time to talk about. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopy Mag. And you can find the podcast, the one that you're listening to right now in most podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public under Scopy Radio.
And I'm here, as always, to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head over to scopymag.com /subscribe, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This is huge because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook buries our content. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should sign up for those email blasts. The second thing you can do is become a member. For as little as $2 a month, you can help us keep our lights on and keep our website operational. If you're in a position to do so, please consider it. There are some cool incentives associated with it. Also, we have merch for sale. If you head over to scopymag.com/store, you can buy your new favorite shirt, and that is a promise. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.